Welcome. Back in 1997, I think it was, a book appeared, big fat book, appeared in Kazakhstan that was basically a presentation, an argument in favor of a very specific approach to foreign policy for that new country. It was written by Kazım Jomart Tokayev, who was served as foreign minister and as prime minister, and it made a very simple proposal, even though he complicated it with a certain amount of jargon. His proposal simply was that Kazakhstan should base its foreign policy and relations with the rest of the world on a principle of balance. Now, his rather jargony term for this was a multi-vectored foreign policy. But the heart of the matter was he proposed that Kazakhstan should balance the influences and pressures from Moscow with contacts with China. And then in the year 2001, he wrote a supplementary article and said maybe it's a good idea to balance the pressures and contacts from China as well as Russia with the United States. And then in subsequent presentations, he added and made that the West generally. So the idea, though, and the fundamental principle was balance of positive relationships. Not playing A against B, but building solid, and he used the term, strategic partnerships with all three or four or five, if India comes into the picture. And by that means, prevent any one of them or any combination of them from dominating Kazakhstan and threatening its sovereignty and self-definition. This approach was copied throughout Central Asia. There's not a country that didn't adopt it, and it's more or less been the policy of Afghanistan as well now. The question then is, in light of everything we've seen in the last years, I suppose beginning with Georgia, if not before, in 2008, and certainly in light of what's happened in very recent times in Eastern Europe, is this approach still valid? Is it valid at a time when Kazakhstan has signed the papers to join the Eurasian Economic Union? Is this basically an attempt by Kazakhstan to move out of and beyond the balanced approach? And is this a unilateral commitment to one of the parties of the balance at the expense of the other? From the American side, there's the other question, and that is the magic date artificially and imprudently set of January 1, 2015, by which time American forces would be out of Afghanistan. What in the world does this mean for America's relations with Central Asia as a whole? And leading many in the region to question whether we're going to be there. And in other words, whether the balanced approach will work if one of the parties, in this case the United States, isn't prepared to play the role that it is assigned to by that approach. Okay, this is the fundamental question that this paper seeks to address. The response, I think we have to say, very clearly and bluntly, is that Kazakhstan's solution to its Rubik's Cube is not to complain or moan or brag about its accession to the Eurasian Economic Union, but to treat it as a fact, simply a reality, that comes from geography, that comes from various sources, and to then deal with it. And Kazakhstan's approach is, basically to preserve and reaffirm the idea of balance. Now, that sounds very strange at first hearing. But it means bluntly that if you raise your relationship with one party, in this case Russia, you must therefore, to preserve the balance, intensify, deepen your relations with the others, which means the United States, China, and Europe. That is a maybe naive and unrealistic hope. It is definitely the policy of Kazakhstan to deal with this. Now, the question is, how does that mesh with American interests? And the finding of our authors, including Dr. Sultanov, who's not with us today, is that this actually accords very well. We didn't choose one way or another on the membership in the Eurasian Union, but treating it as a fact, it certainly does not obviate the possibility or need for raising the U.S.-Kazakh relationship to a higher level and deepening it and spreading it. That's what this report is about. And that is the fundamental, if you will, thesis on which all sections of the report, which they address. It's where the thesis that permeates the several sections on security, about which we'll hear more shortly, about a strategic partnership. It is the thesis that underlies the presentation on economic relationships, which bluntly acknowledges problems on both sides and suggests ways of addressing them. And it also deals with culture, information, and concerns over democracy and human rights. All of these are treated under the single rubric of a broadened and deepened relationship, which is pursued for separate interests, for separate reasons, in accordance with the interests of both of the parties. So that's the basic argument of the paper. It is online. It'll be available here, copies afterwards. Let me now turn to Oskar Nersha, who is going to amplify this, and then Anders and all of you.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, it's a pleasure and honor to be present here. 7 years ago, in November, I was a visiting scholar at Central Asia Caucasus Institute. First, let me express my gratitude to my American colleagues and especially to Professor Starr, who really had done a significant job and who really served as a bridge between expert communities of Kazakhstan and the United States. This report is not only about Kazakhstan and American relations. This report is also about U.S. policy in Central Asia in its perspective. Of course, we need to be realistic that United States has different foreign policy tasks and objectives in the region, and Kazakhstan is only one part of this strategy, and our task is to make this part more significant in the United States foreign policy, and I believe that we have all necessary potential for this. United States remains an important political factor in Central Asia and has always had been treated in Kazakhstan society as one of key actors of geopolitical balance in the region, and we hope that this tradition that United States will keep this policy and will go further. Of course, there is a famous saying of Winston Churchill that generals are always fighting the last war. And in expert community, we have the same situation that we are always trying to research the issues, but it's like a mirage. And this report, it's a kind of last catch of what we have seen in the region. Let me underline some maybe key challenges for Kazakhstan and U.S. Relations. First, it is accession of Kazakhstan in WTO, and we started this process long ago, but before Russia, but at the moment Kazakhstan is still out of WTO, and we hope that the situation will change this year. And second issue is the next challenge and as well as opportunity for our bilateral relations is integration processes in the region, in Central Asia and in the post-Soviet area. And of course some experts in the West, they ask questions how can it impact on Kazakhstan foreign policy, and to how to what extent Kazakhstan could save its independent stance. I think that you see the Kazakhstani policy towards integration can be called as economic pragmatism strategy, and Kazakhstan puts on the first place economic affairs within integration, and we believe that this is will be not only a challenge but also opportunities for our bilateral relations, and Kazakhstan will continue conduct its multilateral foreign policy, and it will not hinder our bilateral relations with the United States and with the West. Next issue of our common interest, I think it's Central Asian integration, and Central Asian integration is had been put on the first place in the recent foreign policy concept of the Republic of Kazakhstan. And I think that we should our policy should be more focused on this, on integration. But of course, there is some challenges. United States foreign policy towards Central Asia is highly attached to the question of military presence of the United States in Afghanistan, and I think it is over-attached, and I had opportunity to talk to many American experts, and they were quite pessimistic, saying that the withdrawal of troops can negatively affect the U.S. policy towards Central Asia as well. And I think that five Central Asia states plus one within this format, of course, we should have develop our relation with Afghanistan, but we should also, I think, the U.S. strategy also should have some more implications, not only for military issues, but also deal with economic integration issues, eliminating trade barriers and tariff question. And of course, improvement of relations not only between Central Asian states and the United States, but within the region among Central Asian states themselves, because we know that some territorial disputes as well as unsolved regional issues, they're also hindering multilateral ties in the region. And in the end, sometimes during conversation with American experts, they used to say, why you're always talking about geopolitics? They consider that we have some paying too much attention to geopolitical factor in the region, but taking into account last international events, we can say that geopolitical factor is still alive, and we still need United States to be a geopolitical to playing a role of as geopolitical balance in the region. So I'm ready to answer your questions.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Oscar. And Fatima, thank you so much for coming to Washington. And let me just echo Fred and Svante. What a pleasure it's been to work with you. As Oscar noted, the question of security was woven all through our discussions. It's impossible to think about a stronger U.S.-Kazakhstan relationship if security is not in place. How are you going to get development? How are you going to encourage the kind of social and economic integration throughout the region that Oscar has pointed to if you don't have a secure environment? And so this team spent quite a lot of time thinking about what the security opportunities, defense and security opportunities and challenges might be for our relationship going forward. Some of them, I think, seem pretty obvious. And one need only walk around the region from almost any point and look in almost any direction, and you can see rising or falling states, potential instability, revolutions that haven't yet taken place, identity crises, powerful actors and less powerful actors, and all kinds of other potential pathologies that with a little bit of stimulation, could cause Central Asia to become a much more and frightening place than we currently are used to. I think we can say, without a great deal of doubt or hyperbole, that the Central Asian region today features more actors than in any whose security vectors intersect or collide than at almost any other time in history. And secondly, that these actors increasingly have greater capabilities at their disposal in order to chase their objectives. Risk-taking in the Central Asian environment is almost certain to pick up as we go forward for lots of obvious and less obvious reasons that one can point to, and that the region generally, short of a series of good security and defense protocols, is a region in which, an environment in which there is a strong probability of miscalculation and surprise. Now, we discussed through our work the logical conclusion that the best way for Washington, from our point of view, to avoid security breakdowns in Central Asia is to strengthen the regional states and the economies to foster political, economic, and security links with them all, but predominantly with Kazakhstan. The existence of a vacuum in this region would invite external interference with grave consequences for world peace. And such a vacuum could occur for all kinds of different reasons, not least of which could be discontinuities on any of the major states surrounding the Central Asian borders, thinking particularly of Russia or China in this case. So our first recommendation coming from the deliberations we had was to intensify defense and security cooperation and increase NATO interoperability. It's almost certain going forward, in our view, that Kazakhstan's security at some point is going to require the presence and perhaps the use of hard power. Yet, recent crises in Kazakhstan's southern neighbors have illustrated the inadequacy of existing security institutions throughout the regions. Some initiatives offer the scope for expanding Kazakhstan-U.S. cooperation in this regard, including primarily upgrading Kazakhstan's military engagement with the United States, Kazakhstan's deeper participation and integration with international peacekeeping operations and institutions, for example, with OSCE and with NATO, which are consistent with Kazakhstan's multi-vectored foreign policy and certainly also in line with U.S. interests. One of the specific places that an upgrade could take place would be to achieve full interoperability with KazBrig. This is the Kazakhstan Peacekeeping Brigade, with NATO by reaching NATO evaluation level 2 and by expanding the single brigade to a 3-battalion brigade. This, it seems to us, would be very difficult without U.S. cooperation and assistance, and so we have recommended it prominently. We've also looked at the possibility that Kazakhstan should consider some multi-layering of its security arrangements. Multi-layering in the sense that it doesn't have to cast its lot with any particular security institution or range of institutions, but it might think more like a member of the Visegrad Group, which is a sub-layering of NATO engagements and European security institutions, or perhaps even of the type that one begins to see emerging between Azerbaijan, Georgia, and Turkey. Anyway, multi-layering, something that we think that they would find perhaps useful. Also, engaging a greater number of regional security partners, which would include, for example, Japan, India, South Korea, in broad-ranging discussions of regional security. It's very much in Kazakhstan's interest to do it, as it would promote, among other things, the understanding that America's greater engagement with Asia includes very prominently Central Asia, something that has been pretty much absent to date. The second recommendation we made was to institutionalize and intensify the analytic interaction on regional security affairs. Kazakhstan, as you all know, is a Muslim-majority population ruled by secular government with systems of law under which people are considered to be citizens rather than subjects, and they embrace and advance modern knowledge through extensive and growing educational systems. It is intensely in the United States' interest to promote that model of development and help it to prove successful. America's security interests, objectives, and strategies should, we believe, elicit a deep, focused engagement with Central Asia. Yet, it takes very little to understand that few parts of the world are so systematically ignored in American strategic thinking. This isn't something new for those of you who came up through the ranks studying the Soviet Union and that entire imperial experience. Central Asia barely lit a bulb on anybody's screen in those days. It's not surprising that Central Asians themselves have deep skepticism about the American commitment or its interest in a larger strategic engagement. To date, no American president has ever visited Kazakhstan or any other Central Asian state. It's hard to see how this will not change. It's hard to see how this will change without a significant effort to draw attention to Central Asia's and Kazakhstan's strategic importance to the United States. Both Kazakhstan and the United States seek a much deeper understanding of Central Asian dynamics, challenges, and opportunities. And we believe, and we recommend strongly in this report, that our efforts should be directed toward closing significant gaps in our knowledge, perhaps by institutionalizing joint interactions of scholars, of strategists, of policy experts in a way that can feed the processes in both countries and begin to close the gaps in our understanding. We have recommended, for example, sponsoring a joint Kazakh-U.S. research and analysis institute focusing on Central Asia's strategic dynamics, the objectives and strategies of the regional actors, potential downside scenarios, and the contingencies they might cause, and above all, the impact of these on the U.S.-Kazakhstan relationship. No institution like this currently exists anywhere in Central Asia. In Kazakhstan, and Kazakhstan's efforts to host such an institution, we believe, would be welcome just about everywhere. We talk throughout the report about a number of key security issues in which the United States and Kazakhstan can have a significant and powerful dialogue where the opportunities for our cooperation offer real possibilities for helping resolve some of these issues. Proliferation, nuclear proliferation primarily, is certainly one of them. And there are a few issues in the strategic realm that drive American strategic thinking so powerfully. A proliferated world in which, for example, Kazakhstan took an early stand to get rid of its nuclear weapons, but also to become a convener for those who need to talk in the region and outside the region who need to talk about and need to resolve the proliferation problems has been salutary. But we're talking about a nuclear world, a possible nuclear world in which traffic in nuclear parts and know-how could move in many different directions, where small nuclear arsenals could destabilize existing deterrent relationships by making first use attractive, and increased incentives throughout the region for other actors to acquire nuclear capability and multiply. All we have to remember is that Central Asia is the crucible of nuclear activity, with Europe, Russia, China, Pakistan, India, potentially Iran, followed by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and maybe others, all playing within a fairly constricted space and very likely all reacting or interacting with one another. State weakness is another area we talked a lot about. We believe that Kazakhstan could play a very important role as a convening center for discussions on the kinds of weaknesses in its region, and there are going to be many. There are many already. Energy security, we all know about. Drugs and criminal activities. There are lots and lots of security and defense areas where Kazakhstan and the United States can have a very, very profitable dialogue, and to institutionalize those and a strong strategic partnership is very much in our common interest. Fatima. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. First of all, thank you for your invitation, and I should say that it was a great opportunity and honor to work we're in the team of Dr. Starr, and it was a great, teamwork of Kazakhstani and American scholars. Let me say a few words about Kazakhstan's role in the U.S. Foreign policy, and then about multivectoral foreign policy of Kazakhstan. I agree with my colleagues that Central Asia, in compare with other regions, is losing its priorities, place in the U.S. foreign policy. And a rare direction of the U.S. interests from Central Asia to Asia-Pacific region could be explained by many factors. And that is why today it's time for the U.S. and Kazakhstan to move bilateral relations to the new level, to the level of strategic partnership. And that is why Kazakhstan should look for the new format of interaction with the world superpower, not only to attract investment in the energy sector, but also for the correlation of mutual interests in all areas, just to move to the new level of cooperation. Within the framework of its multidimensional or multivectoral foreign policy, Kazakhstan should strengthen the American vector, and it is in the mutually beneficial for both countries. United States is interested in a stable and predictable political partner as Kazakhstan, and Kazakhstan has proved itself like a stable and predictable partner, and United States supports multidimensional, multivectoral foreign policy. Today, it is a fact that multivector foreign policy of Kazakhstan is creating new opportunities for fruitful and effective partnership with the countries both of the West and the East. In the foreign policy concept for 2014-2020, multivectoralism is remaining as a basis for developing the direction of balance, pragmatism, mutual benefits, solely defending national interests. And multi-vector foreign policy can be viewed from the different perspectives. The recognition that Central Asian countries are the land centers, diversification of trade and energy routes is an important pillar of multi-vector foreign policy. Also, multivectoralism is it is a recognition of a multipolar character of the contemporary world. However, the geopolitical tensions that developed as a result of the Ukrainian crisis, according to the experts both in Kazakhstan and in the U.S., question Kazakhstan's ability to maintain balance in the region between three major powers, Russia, China, and the United States. It is considered that Astana will have to solve the problem of maintaining a multi-vector nature of its foreign policy in the condition of complicated U.S.-Russian relations, the development of close ties between Russia and China on the basis of the general opposition to the U.S. Washington supports Kazakhstan's aspiration to pursue a multi-vector foreign policy in relations with external partners, but if it does not negative affect the interests of the United States. I think this explains a certain criticism of the Customs Union and the emerging Eurasian Economic Union, and but the more balanced multi-vector policy with increased focus on the preservation of the sovereignty allows Kazakhstan to develop and deepen relations with all major actors in Central Asia and also with the United States. Kazakhstan is American foreign policy discourse is characterized as a strategic partner, and multi-vector foreign policy is meeting the interests of the United States. At the same time, Washington demonstrated an understanding of the fact that the United States is not the exclusive strategic partner, and interest in maintaining balanced relations of Kazakhstan with other great powers transformed into a policy of geopolitical pluralism within strategies of Greater Central Asia and the New Silk Road. Saying about necessity to develop our relations on the new level of strategic partnership, we should mention that our partnership did not avoid some problems. The process of democratic state building, situation with the human rights, multi-party system, and many other issues are criticized by various U.S. funds and commissions. According to the experts, the slow democratic transition makes some contradictions to the political and economic reforms, both in the country and in the region, where Kazakhstan plays a leading role. However, the differences in the assessment of the democratization process can be brought to the level of dialogue, constructive solution. The basis for this is a lack of fundamental contradictions in bilateral relations. Astana and Washington confirm the importance of democratic development and efforts to strengthen the institutions of civil society. And the building of a strategic partnership between two countries, I think, should be should strengthen the dialogue between civil societies. And dialogues between civil societies can become a new form of cooperation at the civil society level. Civil society initiatives establish people-to-people links in two ways, sharing and project. Kazakh and American laboratories, universities, think tanks, and other agencies involved in a cultural and educational exchange and joint projects can become a platform for interested people in the United States and Kazakhstan, and which will not only try to fill the information gap, but also to find common ground on issues discussed in the negotiations between the governments of the United States and Republic of Kazakhstan. Dialogues can play an important function in the formation or strengthening strategic partnership between two countries. Governments can officially support and fund a meeting of interest groups who share their views and seek to develop a common position on issues of concern to business community, trade unions, consumers, environmentalists, and other groups, both in Kazakhstan and America. These dialogues can be new civil society initiatives with government support. Thank you.
Can I make a very quick note?
Of course.
I see George Kroll back there. who has just finished serving a very, very positive. He's still in Uzbekistan, but has been named ambassador to Kazakhstan. And it's a pleasure to see you, George. If there are any other former or future ambassadors to Kazakhstan present, I apologize for not introducing you.
Very good. With that, the floor is open. I would ask you to identify yourself and keep your question short. Who would like to start? At the back.
Thank
Thank you. I'm now Bahori Mamova from the Voice of America. My question is to two Kazakh experts. Fatima, you just talked about the necessity of a dialogue. There is a dialogue. There is an ongoing dialogue that U.S. has between each country in Central Asia, specifically with Kazakhstan. There is something called annual bilateral consultations. How do you assess these engagements, these interactions? And they've been held as of 2009, if I'm not mistaken.
About what she's asking about existing.
Okay. I agree that bilateral relations should be institutionalized on a different levels. And you are saying about intergovernment or interstate dialogues. But I am saying about the dialogues between civil societies. Because you know that Kazakhstan and the USA are far from each other, and we cannot say that we have a lot of, for example, students from the US or a lot of Kazakh students in the US. And also it's about a trade. It's about maybe small business. That is why I think civil society should be more active and participate in not only like a people-to-people level, but also their interests should be presented in the level of government-to-government, state-to-state. I think that in globalization, in the condition of globalization, it's very important to build the environment of trust, the environment of understanding. And as a professor of the university, as a lecturer and as a teacher, I can say that we should train a new generation of American and Central Asian or Kazakh young people who could just interact and understand, because we are training our future diplomats, future leaders of 21st century. And I think in our report, the part about education, about cultural interaction is very important. And I just want to focus on this level of civil societies, level of people to people. And for example, I can say that our relations with Russia, I agree that we have a lot of agreements, we have a lot of, some interactions in the level of business and the policy makers. But what about common people? You see that in Central Asia, that in Central Asia, the space of Russian language is getting narrow. And our young, my students, they prefer to speak Kazakh and English. And so it is easier to study abroad, not in Russia. This is a problem. And what can we say about our common future?
Oscar, would you like to add something about the bilateral relationship and the existing institutions? Are they sufficient?
I could say that our dialogue with the United States has never been so wonderful as during this administration. And it's true. But you see, Kazakhstan is at the crossroads of regional dialogues and regional initiatives. We have a dialogue also with Japan, Central Asia plus Japan. We have a dialogue with South Korea, Korea plus Central Asia. And we also have a regional initiative formulated by Russia within the frame of CSTO, Eurasian integration, and a new president of China has also recently presented a new initiative for Central Asia of China, Economic Belt of Silk Road. And you see, today one American expert, he told one interesting formula, and Russia has influence in Central Asia, but China has money. What, and my question, what about United States? You see, I'll tell you some trade figures, for example. Kazakhstan trade with United States, if I'm not mistaken, reached $2.7 billion. The first trade partner, number first of Kazakhstan is Russia, is $23.5 billion. With China, almost the same, $23 billion. And if we if you consider European Union as a single actor, our trade with Europe is $50 mm-hmm. billion. And let's again return to our figures with the United States, $2.7 billion. So it's a question, or it's answer to your question. So it's not enough. Of course it's not enough.
The gentleman in the middle.
Thank you. My name is Alexander Mansurov. I'm with SAIS. It's my understanding that the way the U.S. government looks at Central Asia and Kazakhstan is pretty much through the operational lenses. We need to engage this region to basically supply the troops, move the troops to and out of Afghanistan. So we need the base, we need the routes open. But once the troops are gone, January 1st, that operational requirement will be lifted. And so there are two policy options. One is hands-off policy. Let's go back to before September 11th, basically draw down total defense, draw down and leave the place to the State Department, you know, to play its experiments with democracy and human rights there with the DOD out of the picture. Or another policy option, it's basically let's keep the current status quo with the DOD in the lead and, you know, maintaining our military presence there. But you seem to advocate the third way, if I hear you correctly, and that is to step up the engagement with the region, with Kazakhstan. So what I would like you to do is to tell us, you know, the pros and cons of your third way, the strengths and weaknesses of your third approach, and why do you think this is the way to go, as opposed to going back before 9/11 to that position or maintaining the current policy, the status quo policy. Thank you.
Good. Who would like to start?
Go ahead, Dave, I guess.
Well, we are rapidly moving beyond this operational issue, which you could say hijacked our interests in the whole region for the duration of the post 9/11 era, but that is at least technically passing. It's not to idealize the period before, which was remarkably weak, thin on the security side. And we, I think, entertained the fantasy, not just in Kazakhstan and Central Asia, but in many other areas, that you can somehow maintain a discussion of economic relations, investments, trade, and all that, without talking also about security. Well, basically, that is to say that only one partner of a conversation's interests are being taken into account. And we are saying that, that the security side has to be treated seriously and in relationship to the others. We are also, by the way, if you read the report, which I urge you to do, it's a carefully written document, you'll see that we're not slighting the cultural, human rights, all that, those dimensions either. But we're very clear on that, and that is that the relationship between the countries is such that when problems arise, they can be addressed by working with rather than acting upon the other party. And on that, I think a very different approach is needed. And not to mention the more basic issues of the quality of research that underlies a lot of American charges with regard to breaches of human rights and democratic practices. These exist, of course, and there's no denying it, but they have to be based on solid evidence, which is not always the case. We basically outsource the research on these matters to private groups. But more important than that is once we have an issue that we want to raise or than they want to raise, should that occur, it can now be done very directly, very bluntly, but with rather than simply by hectoring the other party.
Further, anybody else wants to pick up?
Let me just add that when you read the report, you will see that we have advocated not necessarily having DOD in front or anybody else in front. We've advocated processes of integration across many, many different sectors of society, politics, military, economics. Militaries, and from my remarks, you might get that impression, militaries happen to be very good integrators, exceptionally good integrators. And our experience almost everywhere in the world has been that where we have pursued military integration, it is a significant complement to other kinds of integration.
Further note, this really in a long historical sense, very peculiar development that's taking place in Russia right now. One thing you have to say in behalf of what's being done by Mr. Putin is that this has, by his designating a single objective for the country and designating it himself without a lot of confusing internal dialogue, and by then imposing that as an agenda on highly diverse sectors of the national life, from information to security to economics to you name it, and using that he has achieved a high degree of coordination. Now, you do not respond to a highly coordinated policy with a diffuse and uncoordinated policy. So if for no other reason, you've got to move to a different way of doing business than we have.
Please. You see, in this report, we are advocating a smart engagement of the United States in the region. I would say a responsible engagement, because engagement can be different. You see, the troops in military bases in Central Asia and several years ago, and U.S. presence in Afghanistan, it had led to a different results. So, and you see the attitude in the region towards United States in the 19th and in the beginning of the new century, they're quite different. So that is why we are not asking for a new military basis of United States in the region. We are asking about involvement of United States in the region, and we think that that the role of the positive role of United States in the region, it should be kept. So the main idea is a smart engagement.
Yes, ma'am. Second row.
Okay, thank
just
you.
A moment. Microphone's coming.
I need a mic. I think I'm loud enough.
No, we're recording this, so
please. Fine. My name is Anna Dillon. I'm from the Church of Scientology National Affairs Office here in D.C.,
And I just, my question is primarily to Fatima, but maybe other panelists would have some comment too. It's, again, regarding the civil society engagement. I thought it was a great thing to bring up. I want to thank you for bringing that up. I think it is a real great idea. I was just wondering if you, when you're saying about it, when you had any, if you had in mind any particular platform or any way that you think is the right way to do this engagement, because it's in my opinion, but civil society wouldn't exist in a vacuum. The non-governmental groups collaborate on specific issues. And for the government to let them collaborate and not stop them, the government has to be willing to admit that it has some issues for the civil society to exist and work on and so on. And so the government should not be stopping it for some security concerns. So what is the platform that you think would be the right compromise, I guess, between the security issues and between the civil society issues that they bring up?
In Kazakhstan, government supports NGOs, and we have a lot of NGOs, as I know, about environmental NGOs, about 3,000, like this. When I say about government supporting of civil society, dialogues, I mean that it should not be like violated or forced like in other countries, because Kazakhstan now in the process of transition to the democracy. It is very complicated process because of our historical future and because of objective and subjective reasons. And that is why I believe that government should support NGOs but not interfere in their affairs. In Kazakhstan, there are a lot of different NGOs with a different scope of problems. Mostly they are about human rights, environment, and some movements, youth movements, for example. And I think that in our level of democratization, the NGOs need support. The second point that NGOs, I think, dialogues. And dialogues is not a pure NGOs. Dialogues is interaction between different groups of interested people. For example, business dialogue or trade dialogue or environmental dialogue. These dialogues, they should find their place in a bilateral relations between U.S. and Kazakhstan. They should not exist in a vacuum. They should, they should express the problems of their audience and put it in a another level, upper level, level between governments, level, interaction level between states. And that is why I think dialogues is different from NGOs, but NGOs also play a very important role in our process of transition to democracy. And today I think we reach a good results because we have a lot of information, like informational, newspapers, magazines, opposition parties, voices. And that is why, again, dialects and NGOs, they look like the same, but they are different.
Next. The two gentlemen at the front, who'd like to go first? Please.
Aftab Qazi, CSEI. When we discuss civil society, I have found lots of differences, because I think it's a generic term, but anyway, we talk about civil society in terms of NGOs and the related organizations, but in Eurasia, throughout Central Asia, I have seen their locally operating civil unions. They perform very strong role, very important role in every electoral campaign, voting system, and lots of things. They operate at grassroots level in almost every little town and village. So what in your opinion would be, because NGOs are generally resistant, and what would be your suggestion to reconcile between them? Thank you.
About unions? He means tribes?
When you say union,
civil unions.
Civil, you mean tribes?
Civil unions.
Clans?
From village level to...
So you don't mean the typical NGOs, you're talking about different forms of civil society.
Local civil society.
Locals.
Locally operated.
Locally, yeah.
NGOs is Western region of civil society.
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Something like that,
mm-hmm.
Maybe you mean like in Uzbekistan, Mahalla, it's a...
No? Mahalla is a different...
It's a different.
I have seen this in Kyrgyzstan.
In Kyrgyzstan? Mm-hmm.
And...
what kind of unions you mean?
Participating, actually organizing elections.
Organizing elections.
Yeah, they have to go.
I'm not sure that I understand what about us. Yeah, you see,
that's okay. I think you made the point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
Ambassador Courtney, right next to the gentleman.
Thank you, and thanks for doing this report. This is terrific. This Kazakhstan needs a lot more exposure in the United States and the Western world, and this report will do a lot to help investors and civil society groups in the West need to have access to independent information in Kazakhstan, Russia, other countries, in order to be able to assess opportunities and risks, in the English language especially. So in Russia, Moscow Times is a reasonably honest, independent source of information in the English language, which Westerners can have easy access to. In Ukraine, Kiev Post, same thing. In Georgia, civil.ge provides that. There is no source like that in Kazakhstan. Source in English language, which potential investors, potential trading partners, NGOs in the West can have access to a full range of independent information about Kazakhstan. Is it possible that an information source like that could be developed in Kazakhstan?
Who would like to?
There's an immediate answer, and that is pick up the phone and call Roman Vasilenko. He edits this new Astana Times, and it is still in a formative stage, and I think making bluntly the point you just made, Ambassador Courtney, would be would give them a direction and orientation that they now lack. So, I mean, it shouldn't be just PR. It should be information.
Anders?
Yeah, Bill, thank you. Thank you for that. That's a good 5,000 feet suggestion. We actually looked at this question from about 25,000 feet, and one of the things that we suggest in the report is for Kazakhstan to undertake, perhaps with the assistance of an American NGO or NED or somebody like that, an information audit that will look at where this society is going over the next 20 to 25 years, what kinds of information it's going to need to get there, how the process and the speed of disengagement from what has been predominantly a Russian language sphere and supply route is going to take place or should take place or should not take place, and how we drill down from that into more specific kinds of products of the kind you're talking about.
the lady in the third row first, and then we'll move back to this side.
Thank you very much. My name is Natasha Zakharchenko. I'm a visiting research fellow on Central Asian program at Elliott School of International Affairs. I'm myself from Kyrgyzstan. Thank you very much for this report. I've actually read it. And I still have two questions. The first one to Dr. Starr. You have mentioned that the approach to this multilateral policy perfectly fits the U.S. interest. Can you talk a bit how does it fit to Russia's interest? And as I have mentioned, I'm from Kyrgyzstan, and once for our multilateral policy, it mentioned a lot. And the second question to Dr. Nurshah about this, the need of Central Asian integration. And for me and for many scholars, probably this is like a mirage by itself, the recent border conflict between Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, gas problems in Uzbekistan, the so-called world nomad games, which are ready to start these days in Issyk-Kul, were ignored by most Central Asian states and not by Russia, Mongolia, and China. What are the signs that this integration is actually possible? Thank you very much.
With regard to whether this is compatible with Russia's interests, you have to distinguish between their real interests and what they may claim to be their interests. If they see anything as a threat to their interests, obviously that it is not compatible. Cooler analysis of what their real interests are, which includes stability on their southern border, prosperity, zone of prosperity and development that isn't controlled by anyone externally. If these are their real interests, which they are, then what we're proposing is totally in Russia's interests. Now, I just want to say the obvious. The old maxim, which I remember hearing years ago from George Kennan, that to be a friend of the United States, you don't have to be an enemy of someone else, I think absolutely holds in this case. And I think the distinctive achievement of Kazakh diplomacy, which is a regional achievement because everyone else is operating on the same basis, they're not courting poor relations with anyone. They see the possibility of maintaining a web of positive relationships, each of which is used very deftly and adroitly to if you will, moderate the excesses of the others.
Oscar?
In 2007, in Kazakhstan at a conference when Kazakhstan was promoting the idea of integration of Central Asian states, I remember Mr. Bogatyrev, he was the head of Institute for Strategic Studies in Kyrgyzstan at that time, he made a report saying the contrary, that Central Asia is a disintegrating region. It was a strong contrast to what Kazakhstan was saying at that time. You see, I believe that territorial disputes, all of them, it's a legacy of Soviet Union, of course, Soviet legacy. But these issues can be solved. And I think that a new generation, of young generation, of course, they have a different mentality, and many of regional issues, they could be solved within maybe 10, 15 years, I believe.
Gentleman in the red shirt? Right there.
Hi, Nick Snow from Oil and Gas Journal. Admittedly, I have a very narrow view considering who I report for, but I have noticed that Kazakhstan's oil and gas ministry has apparently succeeded in developing diversified relationships. It's not only engaged with Chevron from the United States in developing its oil, its crude oil resources, but it's also got significant financing from China to develop a pipeline to export gas. Does this provide a model for the country as it moves forward in developing this other web of positive relationships, as Dr. Starr suggested, in other areas.
Good question.
Let me venture an opinion. Maybe. I think we have to be very careful not to idealize the economic relationship that exists between Kazakhstan and the United States or Kazakhstan and anyone else. There have been very conspicuous examples of pure caprice. A contract, there are too many cases where a contract isn't a contract, or if it is a contract where there's no machinery for enforcing it, or the machinery doesn't work. To his great credit, President Nazarbayev has proposed, and I believe it now exists, a new instrument for adjudicating problems that arise with investors. However, there has to be much greater degree of certainty and much lower degree of caprice in all contractual relations with the Republic of Kazakhstan if the aspirations that the Kazakhs themselves hold are going to be achieved within with respect to American, with respect to Western, and for that matter, respect to a lot of Asian investment as well. This is urgently needed. It's doable. Kazakhs are very knowledgeable about this. They're quite open in discussing it, but it's got to be dealt with. They've got to move beyond the sort of practices that were understandable during this amazing transition from a state-owned economy to a more pluralistic one. And the report is very blunt on this subject with the support of both the Kazakh and American sides.
Dr. Daly.
John Daly, Cassie. I would like to first paraphrase your esteemed colleague and mine, Dr. Frederick Starr, because the question relates to something he is, for the last at least decades, spoken about in U.S. policy towards Central Asia, which he has termed brilliantly dollar store diplomacy, that the financial assistance to Central Asian region has been minor. Now, it seems to me that when the Soviet Union collapsed, America's primary interest in the southern tier, Caucasus, Caspian, Central Asia, was energy. After 9/11, there was an added layer of military access. Well, now we have the drawdown or the retrograde in Afghanistan, and you'll notice at the recent NATO conference in Wales, Afghanistan was also almost an afterthought. It was Islamic State, and it was confronting Russia. And, of course, Afghanistan right now is politically in gridlock between Abdullah and Ghani. And it looks like the United States' presence will downgrade. Furthermore, our bases in other parts of Central Asia, Karshi-Khanabad in Uzbekistan 2005 was wound down. We're now out of Manas. So my question is this. How do you convince the Washington establishment to refocus from its energy focus, secondary military focus, to a broader economic focus, which includes regional interests? And one of mine in particular is, for example, railway development, which would benefit not only the individual nations, but the region as a whole, provide diverse export outlets and so forth. I have seen nothing, and perhaps you can enlighten me, that Washington is preparing to do anything other than bang the Islamic State like a gong and confront Russia. And up to now, it seems to me, Central Asia continues to be almost an afterthought. And finally, in the case of Kazakhstan, I think the military relationship has an added degree of complexity, and that Kazakhstan is also a member of the SCO, along with its Partnership for Peace relationship with NATO. But the big question is, what do you suggest about reorienting Washington to prioritize economic interests in Central Asia, Kazakhstan, over the way they've been before, and break outside the box of Dr. Starr's dollar store diplomacy? Thank you very much.
If I may start, I think what we're saying is not necessarily that you're let a single area of interest take the lead. I mean, what we've been arguing at this institute for over a decade is that there are several areas of U.S. interest, or Western interest for that matter, in this broader region. Some of it lie in the security field, some in the economic and energy field, and some what you'd call the normative field, the issue of governance, human rights, and so on. And I think the record of policy over the past few decades is that at some points we've tried to push one area without pushing the others. For a while, as you correctly pointed out, the economic agenda was leading, then the security agenda and counterterrorism was leading, and the other areas were allowed to drift. And what we've seen in the past few years is that the U.S. interest in economic and energy has faded. The interest in security has faded, which leaves the only game in town as far as the people in the region are concerned, or the leaders of the region, or countries are concerned, is the governance and democracy agenda. And they are saying, well, or let me put it this way, we don't have very much to show for that. The idea, I think, is you cannot expect to be successful in one area unless you're prepared to engage in the other areas. You're not likely to advance democracy or human rights in an area if you don't take the concerns in security areas and existential security concerns of these countries seriously, and vice versa. You're not likely to be very successful in developing a security or economic partnership unless you take the governance issues seriously. We must have done something wrong since we haven't been able to convince people of this. But I think the broader argument is not that you allow one area to go ahead of the others. But if you want to achieve something, you have to have a broad engagement in several different areas. Would my colleagues disagree?
I think what you're saying, Svante, is that we need to get strategic about Central Asia and not transactional. One of the things that those of us who have worked on strategy for a long time see with respect to how the American government approaches it is that it tends to have a very short time horizon. That's probably because everybody's chasing their inbox. Things just don't go out more than about 6 weeks. But what we're suggesting is for this region, as in so many others, but this one in particular, because of its potential for both positive and negative change and dynamics, is that we really need to be asking ourselves, what do we want this region to look like in 30 or 40 years? How do you get there? What kinds of pathways lead into alternative futures, and what lies along those pathways that we should be paying attention to? Where do the different actors see their objectives in these different alternative futures? What kinds of strategies do they devise to pursue them? Where do those strategies intersect, converge, or collide? None of that is done anywhere, in my knowledge, in the U.S. government relative to Central Asia. If it's done anywhere, and even if at all briefly, it's done by the military, which has a long-term interest in understanding how to shape the environments it might find itself in, but not systematically.
May we turn to Ambassador Kroll for an off-the-record comment? Until you're confirmed.
Really,
yeah, okay.
I can't talk about anything about Congress, but I can say as somebody that's currently in the U.S. government, and I was Deputy Assistant Secretary for Central Asian Affairs and been dealing with this whole area of the former Soviet Union for the last 23 years, that you really have to look at the nature of the U.S. government and how decisions are made. And when you say there isn't a strategic vision, well, there are very clear reasons why. I mean, when you have, you know, the changing administrations and new personalities that come in and out, if you need to pursue, you know, people in the State Department as well as in the Defense Department, bureaucrats, you know, we've been there for 23 years or so. We see these things and we try to push them. But when you have the political changes that occur in administrations, every 4 years, even if it's a president for 8 years, people change in the Defense Department and in the White House and the like as well, that what you do find is it's very difficult to have a strategic vision when you need, as you said, a strategy and people who can drive it for the long term. Now, people in Central Asia who've been there a long time, like the presidents of Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan and many of the people we all know have been there a long time. They've seen all of this, but that's not the case in the United States. It's just the way our system operates. And so, therefore, I think, you know, we all have to keep that into perspective when we are calling upon the United States government to think and act strategically. It's, in my experience, that's very difficult to do simply because of the nature of our system. But that is the burden is on people in the bureaucracies who have to are dealing with it day in and day out, decade after decade, to try to push these ideas as to why it's important to invest in the future in places like Central Asia where our interests are at stake and they just need to be made clear to people, members of Congress, as well as the American public, and as well as within our own government. Thank you.
I think we have time for about one or two more questions or comments. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, professors. I'm Anna. I'm a student from China. Personally, I'm very interested in Kazakhstan issues because years ago, in a model United Nations conference, I played the role of delegate of Kazakhstan. So, as a student from China, my question is, since we all know that China has strategic partnership with both Kazakhstan and the United States, so what do you think, what the role China plays in the Kazakhstan and United States relationships?
Would our Kazakh colleagues say a word on China?
I think that China plays a different role in U.S. foreign policy. But you see, China is an emerging power, and its role is multiple. For Kazakhstan, China is also one of key foreign partners. And you see, so we cannot ignore our relations with China. And you see, rising Chinese economy is also an opportunity for Kazakhstan because China is, it's interesting, but at the moment is also one of source of innovations, new technologies, IT technologies. So it's a growing market, and Kazakhstan is interested in Chinese markets for exporting its goods. I was surprised comparing the figure of Kazakhstan trade with Russia and with China, and there is a negative saldo of trade of Kazakhstan with Russia because we are selling Russia less than China selling goods to us. It's about $6-7 billion. But with China, we have a positive trade balance, so we are selling China more than China selling to us. So it's very interesting. So that is why I think that. But if, of course, we hope that Chinese understanding of U.S. policy, especially with the shift toward Asia, and on the other hand, United States' vision of Chinese policy, that we hope that our economic and foreign partners, that they will formulate a positive agenda in Central Asia.
Can I see? Mm-hmm. Okay, I think in relations between China and Kazakhstan, China and the USA, there are several factors. First, that there are opinion among scholars that it is some competition between China, Russia, and the U.S. In Central Asia. But Kazakhstan is pursuing its independent policy, and that is why I think that our multidimensional, multivectoral policy
does not mean that all vectors are equal. We have priorities. And that is why Kazakhstan from its side, I think, will pursue its policy of sovereignty and based on the pragmatic principles. And as it was suggested in a great Central Asia project, China, U.S., and Russia should find something like a geopolitical pluralism and find their own role and place in Central Asia, no damaging the national interests and security of Central Asian states.
Let me add one more information. There was a question about Chinese role in Kazakhstani energy sector. But you see, last year it was about 23-25%. And in general, the share of American and in general European role in Kazakhstani sector is much more higher, the figures, than Chinese.
Another quick note on China. Most of the discussion in Central Asia about China is based on discussions of Chinese policies. It's not so obvious to me that policy determines everything that is happening from the side of China in Central Asia. And I'd go further and to suggest an awful lot and an increasing amount of Chinese activity in Central Asia is not only beyond the government, but it is beyond the government's control. And that factor has never been analyzed. They're active people, they're a lot, seize opportunities, and this is part of reality. But we've never, neither we nor the Kazakhs have particularly wanted to discuss this complicated reality. Is it a positive or negative? It's a reality.
I would underline that. It seems to me that there are a couple of things that one wants to factor in and into any consideration of China in Central Asia. The first is the reality that China is going to be Central Asia's big player, period. It's already started. You see it everywhere you go. It is going to be the economic powerhouse of Central Asia. I don't think there's any getting around that, number one. Number two is that if things go the way people like yours truly think they're going to go, a little further north in from Moscow and everything that that it's involved in, it's entirely plausible to me that there will be a strong convergence of American and Chinese interest in Central Asia to make sure that it remains stable as the North destabilizes and spirals down. I think that understanding Central Asia through Chinese eyes is increasingly important for our own analysis. We don't do nearly enough of it, and I'd like to see some way to institutionalize that, and it might be institutionalized, by the way, in the kind of arrangement that we've suggested between the United States and Kazakhstan.
I think with that we're out of time. I'd like to thank first our Kazakh colleagues for coming here and for being part of this project with us, and I'd like to thank also the audience for coming and for your for making this discussion more lively than it otherwise would have been. Thank you, and see you at a future forum.
Here.